You can visit our website anytime you like, rte.ie/Mooney. Keep your eyes on the owls. They are really, really beautiful. And trust me, at night time, it is the best time to see the owls. So tune in anytime after 7 p.m. You can log on and off during the day if you just want to see them in the box, but the activity's happening after 7, 9 p.m. in the evening. Depends on when the parents are coming in to feed them. They can feed at different times, but usually after dusk. At any rate, what I'm going to tell you about now, yes, many Irish people go to France at this time of year. They hop on the ferry or they get on a plane and they go there for the weather, the food, the culture. But what if I was to tell you that several hundred, possibly several thousand French citizens have made their way in secret to Ireland and are now living underground among us? Well, you'd be shocked, wouldn't you? How could this happen? How did nobody notice? Where is passport control when you need it? Well, the French citizens I'm referring to are in fact earthworms, Prosalodrillus amplicitosus, to be exact, and they have been discovered in a Dublin farm 1,000 kilometres from their native home in France. So how did they get here? And what does it mean for the Irish earthworm? Well, a UCD study about these French visitors was published this week by the prestigious Royal Society, and we have the co-author of the study here with us. His name is Dr. Olaf Schmidt. He's a senior lecturer in the UCD School of Agriculture and Food Science and a principal investigator at UCD's Earth Institute. And Olaf, I am told reliably by Katrina that you think we do too much about butterflies and small mammals and we should be doing more about earthworms. Is that true?
No, I would never start on a negative point like this.
It's not really negative. Go on anyway.
But my role is, to advocate that we also have to look, below ground, which is very exciting. There is lots of stuff of insects and bacteria and mycorrhizal fungi and nematode worms. And it is extremely, let's say, exciting and also important for, ecosystem functioning and nutrient cycling and so on.
You're an oligocatologist. Am I pronouncing that correctly? Can you pronounce it for me, please?
Oligocatologist. Segmented worms with, a small number of setae or bristles. Mm. So oligocatea.
Oligocatea. Now, tell me about these worms that you've brought in for me today.
Well, what can I say? They're just absolutely amazing why they are here and, let's say, how did they get here? Mm-hmm. They're extremely numerous in this one farm and they have just opened up ecological questions,
So as I understand it, one of your students, who's a PhD student,
yes,
was foraging around and found these worms in a farm in South County Dublin.
Indeed.
The farm remains nameless.
Indeed.
But I know it well. But at any rate, you recognise the worms because you had seen this worm before.
Yes.
Is that correct? Where had you seen it?
Only once. And this was in 2007, when we did, the first ever nationwide survey of biodiversity, in Ireland, in the soil. And we looked at bacteria and fungi, nematode worms and ants and so on. And we found in Louth, in a farm,
Angus County,
one adult, of this worm, and we just had no idea what it was. So we had to look up books, and ask experts. And it turned out that it is one of a species in a genus that is endemic in a small region in Aquitaine, in the Mediterranean, in France. And we were, of course, very, interested in this and excited. And we went back and we looked in that field, but no more worms appeared. Mm-hmm. And then because of this, we instantaneously knew what we were looking at, when we saw these jars with many, many of this.
That came in many years later.
Now, recent survey.
Yeah. I didn't realize that worms were solitary creatures.
In what sense?
You said that in County Louth, you only found one. And then you went back.
Yes.
Presumably you dug up the whole place.
We did.
And
we
didn't find a single other worm. Is that unusual?
I mean, even if I was digging in my garden...
No, we found other worms, but none of that particular species.
Sure, I know that, Aina.
Sorry.
Thank you.
That was my bad.
That's the point I'm making.
That was my bad.
You didn't know this particular worm. I understood exactly what you're talking about. But I'm saying, why would you only find one of these worms, this particular species? Mm. How come you could go back and not find another one of its kind?
Yes. And chances are that in that particular field, it was, you know, maybe, or it had recently been introduced, you know, in small numbers, maybe, you know, with hedge plants or with soil or on potatoes or, you know, or and so on. And the issue with those new species when they're introduced always is, will they actually survive or not? You know, is there more than one? So they will reproduce, you know, and it may be that in that instance in Louth, that they had been introduced in small numbers, but never established in larger numbers as in this farm we have now in Dublin.
Now, I'm just wondering, how far down did you dig? Do you know anything about them on their home territory in the Mediterranean? Are they deep digging worms? You know, do they go down really deep? Do they go down any deeper than the common or garden earthworm we have here in Ireland?
Yes, we would normally look with a mixture of methods when you, you know, extract earthworms. You would use your spade and you would excavate a soil block. What you would normally do is that you would stay, let's say, in the top soil, you know, 30 centimetres, and then into this pit, you would pour, you know, a weak solution of what we use as mustard oil, and it will infiltrate in the soil and it will, you know, expel deeper living worms as well.
So they'll come up anyway. But worms have a different reproduction system to, say, snails and slugs. Now, while they're hermaphrodites, the same as snails and slugs are, they only produce one baby at a time. So presumably, maybe in Dunlear, a bird with this egg on its foot or caught in a bit of soil just left one, and W just happened to find the only one that was there in County Louth.
Which, yes, I mean, which just is, the you know, an extremely unlikely, you know, event that, let's say, that on that day or in that week when this earthworm was there in that little spot, you know, that we were looking and it was actually there. But it is possible.
Olav, could I ask you about how this creature fares here? If we go back 25,000 years, the whole place is covered in ice. There are no worms. There's no detritus for them to feed on. It's tons and tons of ice on top of everything. Then the ice goes and plants come and the worms move in. And we have a limited number of worms here in the soil. Now, presumably, they exploit all the possible ways of using that environment. Now, this fellow from France arrives in. Is he going to compete with some existing worm, or does he find a niche that isn't being exploited by the worms that are already there?
The word you use there is, you know, is niche. And, you know, the niche concept is extremely important in, you know, ecology, and we are very interested in this because if you, you know, if you would understand the niches of different species, of native species and abundant species and of new exotic species, you will, you know, understand what the interactions will be and the outcomes between species. Now, in this instance, what is ecologically so fascinating is that we already have, you know, the full complement of species that had loads of time to be introduced here, or perhaps, you know, let's say, on their own, you know, with eggs on birds' feet or in soil, you know, with early farmers or in ballast, which was used in ships. So we do have all these species. And in this particular farm, all the fields are very species rich. So in, you know, in most fields, we would have, let's say, 10 coexisting species. And in ecological niche terms, they all do different things. They eat, you know, slightly different things. They also live in different layers of the soil, you know, and so on. And exactly what you ask is now, how is it possible that this new species A was introduced by chance, maybe, and then actually had a chance to carve out its, you know, its own niche? And obviously, in this instance, it has been extremely successful, which is just, you know, amazing, because this species is in a genus of worms that is only endemic in the Mediterranean, but it obviously is now here, you know, in large numbers, and this then raises more questions, like how is it doing that and what will be the impact on the native species and also on the soil and so on.
How long do you think it's been here? That's the big question. I mean,
yes,
if it's doing well and you think it's thriving and it's carved out a little even niche for itself here in Ireland, you know, it didn't just happen overnight.
Absolutely. If you look at the data we have, that we had looked at the whole farm and the number of habitats, it was there in about 6 habitats all over the farm, you know, in large numbers. So we think if you know what their reproductive rate is, you know, the number of eggs late in each year and so on, we suspect that this earthworm must have been here many years because it must have had time to actually, you know, establish itself and reproduce long enough.
You would think a farmer would have noticed it, though.
No, I wouldn't think so, because
why
if
not?
You
they're,
see the worm, okay, here's a jar.
They see everything.
Here's
yeah.
a jar, here's the star of the show, if you maybe want to describe him. They are a medium-sized worm, they're white, and in the same fields, there is a number of species, of native species, that if you would have them on a shovel or in your hand, would look much the same.
Hmm.
To do the species identification, that's what we do here, let's say, you would actually have to fix them in formalin and you use, you know, a key and you would have to look at their features and so on. And then, but if you're just in your own garden or in your, you know, in a field, it isn't that easy to immediately say the different species.
We have 27 species of earthworms in Ireland, and there are different ones in different parts. Now, the way we have, say, the Kerry slug that's in Ireland and then in Spain, have we any worms that are here in Ireland and then not found again until we get to Spain? Have we any Lusitanian earthworms?
Lusitanian earthworms, yes, we do. It's little known, but we do. There are, in particular, two species in the Lambicus genus that are abundant and in Ireland. They both species are also in England, but they are not common there. And then they are also in northern Spain. So obviously there is a link, you know, which is intriguing, because this is, you know, this debate, you know, with the land bridge or the trading links and so on, have they been introduced or not?
So they're in the same part of South Kerry and Cork.
That the
Kerry slug is in. Again, that's the whole area.
They are indeed, yeah.
More evidence of a land bridge then, Derek.
Good, Rich.
We also have, if I can just interject, we have a species that's particularly interesting, you know, which is called Lambicus friendi, which was, you know, named and described in Leeson Park in Dublin by a man called Friend, who was a minister. And this is a big species, you know, looks a little bit like dewworm. And the interesting thing is that it only occurs south of Dublin. It does not occur, you know, north of Dublin at all. And we have no idea why this is, if it's maybe, you know, the microclimate or whatever. And this species is in northern Spain as well.
Richard, do you want to say something?
Yes, I was thinking your interloper did a bit of a leapfrog, really. If you were a worm living in the Aquitaine, and with global warming, conditions north of the Aquitaine would begin to resemble the kind of ones that you like. So you'd expect this worm to spread its way up through France, to start appearing in around the Loire and then cross the Loire into Normandy and Brittany and then gradually come to Ireland. Mm. But this one has taken a huge jump and has gone 1,000 kilometres away over everything in between. And it's gone to the coldest part of Ireland, which is the East Coast area. Isn't it all very odd that this thing not only can do that, but can actually make a go of it at the end of the day?
Absolutely, it is extremely odd. What we have here, all the earthworm species we have are the most hardy and competitive species that are all over Europe, and they have recolonized, you know, all of Scandinavia and Northern Europe and so on after the Ice Age. So you would expect that it is most unlikely that of the many, many species which we have, okay, in the south of Europe, there is sort of in the order of, you know, 300 species, you know, that most of them stay endemic. They stay in the Alps or they stay in Aquitaine. Now, why that is, you know, we don't know. But with this species, what is now particularly fascinating is that when we looked in the literature, we did find two reports that it also has been reported recently, you know, in farmers' fields as well, you know, in central France and in northern Spain. So between the Louth record and this new one we have now and in northern Spain, perhaps this is now evidence to say, well, perhaps there has been a change in the land use practices or, you know, or in the climate or in all of those, that for some reason this earthworm is doing extremely well under this condition and it is now on the move and it has moved.
Is it welcome?
Overall, I think yes, because, you know, we all know that earthworms are very important, you know, in the maintenance of soil structure and in nutrient cycling and so on. And we just have to see now if it will turn invasive. or not. Okay, so basically the difference with an invasive species that in the long term it will turn bad, or it will have, you know, let's say a negative impact on existing species or on ecosystem functions and so on.
Olive, the last immigrant of this kind, worm, to come here, raised quite a panic. It's, of course, the New Zealand flatworm. And yes, the New Zealand flatworm, it was predicted, we discussed it on the Mooney Show perhaps 10 years ago, and the predictions were that it would run through the whole of Ireland and eliminate our Lumbricus terrestris and so forth.
Yeah, but it was a nasty worm.
It hasn't happened. It is still around the area of Northern Ireland where it was first recorded, as far as I know. What is the dynamic? Why didn't it take over? What's going on with this flatworm?
Oh, this species is different because, you know, it is a carnivore, so it eats earthworms and it is now everywhere. But the difference is that if you eat a prey, you will always limit your own numbers when you eat much of your prey. So it is not very likely that, even though it is a nasty, you know, invasive and so on, that it is not likely that it will actually eradicate all our worms, because in ecological theory, you know, it would stipulate that you would die out yourself, you know, before you have actually eaten your last individual of prey. Now, these new earthworm species is different because they have, you know, a vast food resource. This species is in the endogeics, which means they eat mineral soil. Okay, so they live in the soil. They are the really, you know, the hard workers that eat an awful lot of soil and make a living eating that. And there's an awful lot of soil, of course, so it's not likely that they will ever deplete, you know, the soil resource.
I'm told that you are passionate about earthworms and that you think that Ireland is the best place in the world to study earthworms. Is that true?
Absolutely.
Why?
And this is why I'm here, because it just, you know, it is very wet. There's a lot of rain. We have excellent soils. You know, there is an awful lot of earthworms, and it just is, you know, let's say, an excellent place to study earthworms. So I would...
Where in Germany are you from?
The east.
And have you not got earthworms there?
We have earthworms, you know, let's say, in the north of the east. We have much the same species as here, but the climate is different there, you know, much colder winters and usually also warmer summers. So the, you know, the earthworm activity is more restricted to the active seasons, whereas at the moment here, this is perfect and it suits us particularly well that there's so many earthworms, but I'm sure not many listeners would agree with that.
We would have earthworm activity all the year round, because our winters, generally speaking, I know we had two bad ones, but generally speaking, you would have earthworm activity in the winter time as well, because the soil doesn't freeze down.
It's
to
very
any
mild,
depth at
yeah,
all.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Yes, you would.
And then the ones you were saying there that eat the mineral soil, mineral soil is only broken up rocks. So presumably there is carbon in this mineral soil that they extract as food for themselves. So they eat the soil, it goes down through their body, they extract whatever carbon is in that, and then it's excreted out again. Now, if this carbon wasn't used by them, it would stay in the soil. So are they actually now going to increase the amount of carbon that is released to the atmosphere as carbon dioxide, stuff that would stay in the soil if we didn't have these species here? So maybe, you know, we don't want them really, do we?
Yes, this is one possibility. We were, of course, extremely interested. If you have new species like this, you immediately ask, what do they do? What will they do? And we have looked with a method that involves the stable isotope ratios of carbon and nitrogen, where you just look at the earthworm tissues and you say, what do they eat? Okay, so if you have these endogeic species, they all eat soil. So if you look, let's say, at their intestines with a microscope, you will see they all eat the same. But in functional terms, really important is which of the carbon fraction, okay, so let's say the celluloses and the humic acids and so on, which ones are actually, you know, let's say, digested by these worms. And perhaps alarmingly, we did find when we looked at the stable isotope ratios that this worm indeed, it fits in very well. It eats something different, okay? So it's not assimilating carbon and nitrogen, as you say, that is normally accessible to the native species. So in the worst case scenario, you could say, okay, if we maybe have climate change, we will have more of these species that will expand here. If they are, you know, you know, in large numbers, and they eat all our soil. And yes, indeed, it might happen then that they will actually, you know, be negative for the carbon sequestration in soil, which of course we are particularly keen on, because it counteracts the climate change itself. So it is possible that there will be this negative feedback in that, you know, in that system.
Olaf, thank you very much indeed.